The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation.
What's with these arbitrary... We have to name the years on a four-year institution. Sophomore. Junior. What's with it?
I don't know, Matthew.
You don't know? Okay. Well, you know, I have to look for you for these tidbits of knowledge.
And yet, after consistent and constant disappointment, you still continue to do so.
That was go to show you how vast the well you have previously demonstrated. Even after multiple failures, I continue to have faith.
It also could possibly of the old saw about doing the same thing again and again and expecting a different result.
I am insane. That's that would be consistent, yes.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. Greetings and welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. Today is an exciting day for me. Because today we're going to try a spirit of a type that we have traditionally not engaged in this arena, and I'm very excited about how you will respond to said spirit. But just to be clear, and to make sure that not only are good manners observed, but that my heart is put at ease. You are well?
Yep. I'm a little teed at the world at the moment. But other than that, I'm quite okay, man. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Your concern is appreciated. And I appreciate you.
So I'm gonna put that aside for a moment, and given that sometimes this conversation may not necessarily be the appropriate forum to explicate why you are teed at the world, I would like to say, you know, if it is appropriate to share with me in this forum why or some portion of what's going on, I would be curious.
It's nothing special, man. It's just sometimes someone who exhibits symptoms very similar to the cluster that they would lump people with under to say, "Hey, man, you have ADHD." I have not been diagnosed, but I exhibit some of these behaviors, and when you're someone like that, the world just tees you off sometimes because of yourself. I understand it's not a world problem, it's a me problem. I get that. That's not what you asked. Exactly.
I don't want to be intrusive, so I mean,
and yeah. Nothing in particular. And certainly, like, for anyone who's thinking, oh, it's early January and certain things have just happened in the Imperium. no. I listen to me.
The Hitler salute didn't do anything for you?
I could care less. But I'm not interested. Hence, we get to the actual phrase, saying, which is, I could not care less. So it, functionally equivalent in the circumstance. Don't care about that at all. Well, not at all, but you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's just a general, the world is not working with me, except for one thing I have to say, sir. And I say this without it being a platitude at all. Wait, that might not be appropriate. Anyway, the weather is very nice right now. True Bahamian winter has arrived, and that is a cozy thing and makes me want to forgive the world at the moment.
My daughter sent me a photograph of the snow outside her dorm in Boston, and she and I both love the snow. And I told her that it was finally chilling here in Nassau, and that we finally are getting like some really sustained cool weather, you know, and it's like, it just feels good. Yeah, it's accompanied a little bit with some clouds, by some clouds and some rain, you know, spotty rain here and there.
Which I do not object to.
Exactly.
Listen, if it was too sustained, I understand, but like, sometimes
a little shower here, a little shower there.
I feel too many Bahamians like, oh my God, I didn't see the sun directly for 3 days, even though it's still one of the brightest places in the world. What is happening? Just enjoy the soft light.
The soft, diffuse light.
And
that allows your eyes to become like limpid pools that Alfred Lord Tennyson or Lord Byron or even Willie Butler Yeats might compose poetry to celebrate. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, and to be more coarse, the lack of pooling sweat in every crease of your body due to the heat and that direct sunlight.
That is also an advantage, yes.
Just enjoy it. You know you ain't going to the beach anyway right now. Just enjoy it.
One of these days, our conversation is going to have to address us and the beach.
Who is us?
The community of individuals known as Bahamians.
I'm not going to touch that right now.
As I say, one of these days. Because I grew up on the beach every weekend, and as often as possible through the week, I practically camped on the beach in the summers and during school breaks, et cetera, et cetera. And when I drive past beaches now, save for public holidays, the only people I see enjoying our beaches are people who come to the Bahamas as tourists. And
so you don't like to share?
I don't mind sharing, but sharing implies also taking part. Sharing implies also participating.
No, you're lending it to them.
Lending implies continued ownership, which is why I say one of these days we have to talk about us in the beach.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury,
you can't lend something you don't own.
Let it be understood.
That's theft.
That K. Quincy Parker is hereby declared that he hates tourism and that all of these hotels need to be torn down, and we have to go back to living in the bush.
I hate tourism the way we practice it, with a deep and abiding passion.
I know, and I know you hate all them jobs too.
I believe,
and that you believe all that all these people should be living resorts, in poverty.
All these box resorts should absolutely be torn down. Absolutely, all concessions that have been given to all of the foreign direct investors to build these box resorts and these all-inclusives should be revoked. These people should have their money given back to them and be sent packing. if we are going to do tourism, we should do it in a way that benefits Bahamians and benefits the Bahamas.
Yes.
And the tourism model that we currently practice does not do that.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with wanting people to live in the bush, Matthew.
So
please do not equate the two.
Okay.
Thank you. Now, today, we are going to discuss, we're going to talk about one of my favorite beverages, and one that is severely misunderstood in the community of Bahamians who drink alcohol or you know, sip the spirits or partake or however you want to phrase it. And that is cognac. Cognac is a French brandy sort of derivative, right? It starts with wine. So it starts with the grapes in the cognac region. They make a wine. About five or six varietals of grape that traditionally go into the eau de vie that eventually becomes cognac. So they make a wine and then they distill the wine to collect the eau de vie. That first distillation is generally where you get your brandy from. So they take the first distillate, put it in whatever aging mediums they've chosen, that becomes brandy. There's a second distillate that is then collected and aged in oak or whatever, again, aging medium the distiller chooses. And that second distillate is cognac. And cognac is traditionally, because it is twice distilled, it does have a significant alcohol content. Not necessarily more than like some of the cask strength scotches or bourbons, but it does have a good sting. But because of the varietals of grape that are used to make the wine that is used to make the cognac, the flavors in cognac tend to be a lot more subtle and complex, and I find them to be quite balanced between sweet and spicy, and I'm looking forward to your thoughts on the cognac that I've brought for us today. Today's tipple is the H by Hein. Hein is one of the like older cognac producers in France. I think they started around 17, I think it's 1738 was when they opened their doors. So they've been around for a while. And the H by Hein was is sort of their introductory cognac for people like you and I, who are not super wealthy, and I look forward to your thoughts on this particular tipple. But before we ask about the tipple in particular, I would like to ask for what you think about cognac in general. What comes to mind when you think of it?
I don't think about it much at all. I'm sure I've had cognacs that are very generic in the past, but honestly none come to mind at all. So I'm not super prejudiced. I'm aware that there are some famous brands that are in pop culture or whatever, I don't think I ever even tasted any of those.
The one,
maybe.
Yeah, so the one that has the Bahamas in a chokehold right now, of course, is Hennessy. And I'm going to sound a little elitist for the next few seconds, and I apologize in advance.
So normal. One of these days, we'll get these looks recorded.
I'm just gonna skip past that, ladies and gentlemen. So Hennessy is a very popular and very, very good and old cognac brand. It is the way Hennessy has been treated in the Bahamas is symptomatic of how fine spirits and alcohol brands have been co-opted by culture in order to drive sales.
Wait. I want you to make your point, but I'm confused right now. So I just want to get clarification. You're saying it's co-opted by culture in order to make sales. Is it the people who are co-opting, they're trying to sell something associating with the Hennessy? Or are you saying that Hennessy is driving sales through this co-op, in which case I'm confused?
Let's take Busta Rhymes and another cognac brand, Courvoisier.
Hoo-ha.
Right? Bus had this big song, Pass the Courvoisier.
Okay.
Right? For a while, people who were Busta Rhymes fans and who listened to that kind of music went out and bought Courvoisier, not knowing anything about it,
mm-hmm.
except that Busta said we must pass the Courvoisier, so this must taste good. Hennessy has a similar association. It is throughout rap references.
Yes.
And there are people drinking it because it is referenced in their cultural consumption and not because they had a genuine interest in the product itself, which, as I say, doesn't matter to Hennessy. They sell in bottles. And it doesn't matter to the people who are drinking it. They drinking what they want to drink for whatever reason. But for people who are you and I, who want to drink something with intention and want to enjoy it as it is intended to be enjoyed.
Yeah, so thank you for dragging me into your elitism, of which I'm famously a great fan. Not particularly yours, but elitism in general. I just, you know, I'm on the record as just really going to bat for it. I believe a defense of it is of the utmost importance to the continuation of our civilization.
Can I just say that I'm not certain that what I have shared is elitist.
No, you started out by saying that it was. So I believed you that you said this is going to sound elitist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sound.
Oh, slippery, slippery, slippery.
It's. I think it's
going to sound elitist, but it's not really elitist.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was. But please continue. I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah. No. Okay. I get it. I think most people who understand, and I don't think most of them on either side of this are really even going to take offense, unless they're bored and have nothing else to do. If you come to something and you want to get messed up or just follow trends or whatever, that's fine. If you come to something you want to have more intention around it, whether it's intention that makes sense or not in the wider context of the world, that's fine. And having said that, I am really interested in having some intent around this bottle here and having a taste. Teach me, man. I have no preconceptions around cognac. I have no real experience about it.
Yeah. Because my questions were really trying to decipher whether or not the way things like brands like Hennessy and Courvoisier and Remy whether the way those brands have been treated in your experience has influenced or...
Let me put it like this. I'm no longer in my early 30s.
Okay, now that's elitist and ageist.
Continue.
Just making a point. What sounded elitist for me was one thing. That what was definitively and arguably almost essentially...
The fact that elitist, I have aged like a fine wine...
I do not dispute...
Is it?
The fine is
simply that
aging, Matthew.
A fact.
Yes, fine.
What other people derive from that is their own business.
Fine, I'm going to do the
Yeah. But in general, I let things outside opinions influence me much less. Mm. And that's an instant bloom off that bottle. One would expect quite the legs on a double distilled.
Mm-hmm. So the H by Hein is made from grapes that are that go in the champagne, Grand Champagne. So this is a particularly refined and exalted version of the art of cognac. And I think if you are a champagne drinker, you can smell in this nose some similarities with the legit champagne that you've drunk, not sparkling wine, but actual like champagne from proper champagne.
Sorry, I just...
From proper champagne?
As opposed to sparkling
I
wine.
I think there's only one champagne, and that's the whole point of that whole rant. God, proper champagne.
You know what?
From proper America. How does that sound?
You know what? Just sniffed it, you know.
I've been sniffing it. Perhaps that's heightening my tomfoolery. There, you were not the most careful with this pour. There's quite a bit on the glass.
Okay. Well, you know, it is cognac.
Yeah, those notes are there. I'm going to be very non-elitist.
Mm-hmm.
And say quite bluntly, I could smell some grape juice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else? I mean, if grape juice.
Not a lot to say. There are hints of candy here. I'm struggling to isolate.
We generally stay away from how the spirit's creator, the distillers, the vintners, how they describe their own product,
mm-hmm.
because we want to make our own associations and our own decisions. But in this instance, they talk about...
It's actually some licorice in here.
Two things that I find very present in the nose. And probably on the palate as well. One is ripe apricot. And the other is jasmine. I definitely get the apricot on the nose. The herbaceous note that I think they're referencing when they talk about jasmine, what it speaks to me about is, I don't know if your family has the same naming convention as mine, but my family talks about quote unquote night blooming jasmine, which is different than, I guess it would just be regular jasmine. I don't know. But night jasmine has a particular beautiful, almost intoxicating aroma that you get, like, you know, in the night when it's very still and there's a little breeze blowing through the tree and you the shrub, the bush, whatever, and you get that really beautiful scent. And so I feel like when they say there are notes of jasmine, that's kind of what they're trying to convey. I'm not saying that I smell that, but I'm saying that there is an herbaceous note in the nose that is alluring for me. It's sometimes the herbaceous notes, sometimes they smell too green. It's too grassy, you know, and sometimes you can tell that it's going to taste like grass. But this is...
Hey, sir, there are some very nice grasses out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely, bamboo being one.
But I tell you what.
This is telling me that whatever I am about to taste is going to be complicated by these herbaceous notes in the best way. That's what I'm getting.
Yeah, I'm realizing as we sit here, I'm starting to come down with something. I have a slight pre-stuffiness. So I think that's affecting me here for sure.
That's unfortunate.
I know, right?
That is unfortunate.
That is sharp.
Yeah, but if you're coming down with something, we're gonna have to do this one again when your system is clear. Which is not to say that it's not sharp. That's not what I'm saying at all. It is, but sharpness isn't the first thing I get when I taste it.
There's that apricot. Ah. The sweet on this is subtle. Mm-hmm. The grape is not very bold. And it reminds me, actually... a little bit of peach. Interesting.
Yeah, champagne grapes. And I like what I like about the finish is it doesn't
Go on, sorry.
Okay. The finish doesn't really sometimes the finish is a little sharp with a really strong liquor. But the finish on this is so mellow, so warm. It lingers for a good while, but it leaves the impression of a fruit paste of some sort, like a fruit honey. You know, I don't know. It's really nice.
Don't you say that? I got just the slightest notes of fruit cup. syrup, but my little outburst of laughter while you were speaking is actually right on the finish. notes of champagne cola.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh. Okay. That's where that taste comes from. They actually are trying to emulate something.
And would you agree, this is going to be clumsy, Matthew, would you agree that instead of copper, I might be able to get away with like an orangey gold, like orangish color for this? Like, as in, like, orange economy? Like,
Oh, you're right. That was clumsy.
It was. So, somebody... I bring this up because somebody was talking to me about how annoyed they are when Bahamians talk about the orange economy. And so here's my question.
Let's talk about it.
Here's my question. The orange economy.
Why?
Real opportunity? Or buzzword nonsense?
Yes.
And wait. Don't jump the gun. Just by way of information to complicate what is no doubt an easy answer in your head. The creative economy, also known as the orange economy, was valued at $985 billion.
Mm-hmm. Did it say what the section of the Bahamas is?
The creative economy contributed more than $2.25 trillion to the global GDP in 2023.
Oh yeah, did they say like who
the creative
what the pie slices
accounted
were?
Accounted for 6.2% of global employment in 2023.
Okay.
And the outlook for the creative economy is expected to grow by up to 40%.
Okay.
By 2030.
Okay.
And could represent 10% of global GDP.
Okay.
So, if you take those percentages and translate them to the Bahamas, I think the
sorry, I did say I was coming down with something.
I think the translated percentages answer the question that you're asking. The creative economy would have accounted for 6.2% of employment in 2023.
Listen, ask me the original question.
The creative / orange economy.
Mm-hmm.
A real opportunity or a buzzword nonsense?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not answering the affirmative for just the last part. It is both. It is both a genuine opportunity and simultaneously overblown. And in these buzzwordy type of things, in addition to the buzzword hype around it, I don't think that the opportunity that does exist will be taken up, exploited to maximum effect.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
Bunch of complicated reasons. If you want to look at it through a simplistic lens of various capitals, there are not that many resources that make it easy to just jump on it. You got to have highly educated people, which we do, but the question is how many of them do we have? And what are the other opportunities? What's the cost-benefit analysis? What is the opportunity cost involved for people like that? And then you gotta weigh up all these competing interests. And at the end of the day, you have some entities or players like the government who see it as a great benefit to talk about these sorts of things, but not necessarily as a great benefit as compared to other things to spend money on or make capital available. And then these are highly volatile markets. So things either you become very, very elite, and or you become completely commoditized. And so the hollowing out of the middle, the missing middle is often called phenomenon in a bunch of places, but especially in a market like this, you're going to be either working for pennies or one of the very few elite people who get all the stuff, all the big money.
So here's my attempt to complicate your response. The Bahamas Development Bank has a program dedicated to quote unquote the orange economy. I'm on their website now. They define the orange economy as all sectors based on creation of intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
They quote the UNESCO assertion that the purpose of the economy, the orange economy, is the production or reproduction, promotion and dissemination and or the marketing of goods, services and activities that have cultural, artistic or patrimonial content. And the bank has an orange economy centered fund which is aimed at people in the design and visual arts, tourism and cultural heritage, mm-hmm. new media and software, performing arts, music, and the literary arts and publications sectors of the economy.
Okay.
Given that the government agency, semi-government agency, dedicated to investing in the economy directly, recognizes that this is an area worthy of attention. Does that change or complicate your initial response?
I mean, it adds detail, which comes a little bit of nuance, but I don't see that it's challenging my thesis there.
But I wasn't trying to challenge your thesis.
I'm just saying I have no reason to rethink my position, given what you said.
So I wanna make it a zero sum game. This is not both things can be true. This is either the orange economy represents a real economy, a real opportunity,
mm-hmm.
or it's just nonsense.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
No, it's not. I need no luck either way. I'm asking you a direct question.
No. You want to make it that.
No.
But I do not agree with the premise. So I'm not going to answer that as a... You're making it zero sum, either or. And I'm telling you...
But it is either or.
That I know if it's not, I'm not going to pretend.
But it is either or.
For who?
For anyone.
No, not for anyone.
How can it be both an opportunity?
You know, you sound like a lot of people who come in at the very early stages where they've gotten in their minds from the zeitgeist, hey, you need to be an entrepreneur. And I think that's a good idea. I think that a lot of people would realize a lot of potential if they knew that they could get into business. But they get that idea and they're super gung-ho and they haven't yet looked at the reality of things. They haven't come across the right frameworks yet. And they come up and they put together an entire pitch deck, and they pitch, and they say, we say, what's your market? And they say, everyone. This is what your question is like to me. Either or. For who? For anyone? No, not for anyone. This is only applicable in context. It's an opportunity for some. Who are those particular people that it's an opportunity for? Under what circumstances? With what amount of capital? In what of the vast range of markets within the quote-unquote orange economy, which you just said the bank defined as anything from software to fine art? I mean, good God.
Right. So you are laying out all of the reasons that the traditional arguments about how and what the orange economy is and works are nonsense.
And yet it is a particular opportunity for certain entities and people in certain markets who have certain resources. It's genuine. But if it's spoken about just as this broad thing, then yes, it's nonsense. Because people are being hyperbolic about its applicability to everyone.
So, and here we come to, I think, the crux of my questioning. Who gets to take advantage of the orange economy? Who really can benefit from it?
Entities that are already in place with a lot of money that can exploit things that have relatively low margin or have a lot of upfront capital. So they're going to be able to compete on the commodity side, or elite practitioners, elite as in they are very, very, very good at what they do. That could be anything from an architect, a fine artist, to in some cases software.
So let's focus on the individual beneficiary. You are proposing that the ability for an individual to benefit from the orange economy comes with some preset, almost prerequisites. What would you say they are? I want you to elaborate on the last point you made, because I have some questions.
It's difficult to generalize. Again,
I'm not asking for a formula for success. What I'm asking is, are there pre-qualifications in order to qualify as, number one, an elite practitioner, and number two, an elite practitioner who could genuinely benefit from the orange economy?
Well, okay, so what has been left out of my description so far is the market side, right? You can be really, really, really top tier, but almost no one, well, from almost no one to actually no one besides yourself being interested in what you're doing. There has to be an overlap, what people find valuable. If you go to this, the surface interpretation of the Japanese concept of ikigai, right? In that Venn diagram of these three things, you got to have the overlap where people are going to pay you for what it is. So outside of you being very good, it has to be very good and something that people need or want. So prerequisite number one is, like, do people want the type of thing that you're interested in? And then, you know what, let's pull from Ikigai a little bit more. Your sustainability in what you're doing, both from a you interest and from a other people's interest point of view, is important, because you could maybe be a flash in a pan, but how consistent, let's say if you're a music artist, right? What is the average lifespan of a career? how good are you at hitting or exceeding that average lifespan? So what are the types of things that you're going to be doing to do that? Not just like, oh, I'm really good at this particular type of song now that's really popular around the world, but how are you going to evolve with the world as an artist? And what is your plan, knowing that artists have lifespans, right? To actually, when you reach the end, through the natural course of things, you're not going to crash and burn, because we look at the lifespan, you as an entity across time, you might have had a great career, made really stupid financial decisions, and you're 65, destitute, and they write up a sad obituary for you, right? Was that successful? Was that an opportunity that was exploited?
Amadeus Mozart is his name. Literally died in a pauper's grave. Well, he didn't die in a pauper's grave, but he's buried in one. Died poor.
So, I mean, broke. Yeah, okay. So there's all these things. Yeah.
But, with your last point, specifically with regard to performing artists, and I think maybe one could even argue visual artists as well, there are so many examples of people who we could consider either one hit or one album or one performance wonders,
mm-hmm.
who created a moment in the culture and lived successfully the rest of their life on that moment.
Right.
So.
And unless you are, if your one hit is that extreme one hit, and you're disciplined, or just, you know, you were educated in basic financial.
Or let me challenge you again, because the kids who did the song Louie Louie, they lived over on Paradise Island. I was intimately familiar with the person who managed their royalties mm-hmm. for that song.
Mm-hmm.
Every month they got a check that was sufficient for them in 2020 something to live on Paradise Island and not work.
Yeah.
Because that song continues to pay for their life.
Yeah, well, that song, and if they're smart, investments made from the income that came from it. Hopefully they that.
No, it's just the royalty check.
They not just, well, I mean, you know, YOLO, live your life.
Yeah.
Right? That's
or at least that's how it was explained.
That seems.
I want to be clear that I could be wrong, but that's how it was explained to me.
Yeah, but the point is, if it's a big enough win, you can get away with that, right? Mm-hmm. But your 15 minutes of fame may not be that big. So what's the plan? Like, what's the sustainable plan? And the thing is, here's another thing, right? If we're talking about the individual stuff, if you stay on artists, and we don't talk about software for now, the thing is that the investment bank, development bank, loans that you're talking about are broadly unapplicable. Is it inapplicable? It's inapplicable. Because the formula for the artist is pretty simple. It's not easy, but it's simple, right? And during the time that you build up your recognition, your body of work, whereas you get enough of a following is a bad word, but you are known well enough, and then within that there's a following that you can sell to, right? There's very little that you need a loan for, or could pay back a loan for, in the very early days to make that happen. And what you generally see is they have to struggle for a while. And maybe that's mommy or daddy money, or maybe that's eating beans and rice, or maybe, you know, whatever has to be done. But if you take a loan early to get you through that time, it has to be a very, very long loan, and therefore has a very, very high price at the end of it, right? So it just don't make any sense for that set of people in the orange economy. Now, if you're an architect and you have already have some success and you want to set up an office and stuff, maybe, you know, you need a loan for this, a loan for that, whatever, right? Great. You could demonstrate this cash flow, yada, yada. It starts to make a little more sense when the businesses become companies, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's part of what is troubling me about this conversation. Not the conversation you and I are having, but the conversation that this community is having about, quote unquote, the orange economy, is that we have a conception of what it is and what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That is severely flawed, I think.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I could give you super granular detail about performing arts / screen, which is to say filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, on any device these days, we just lump it on the screen now, right? The understanding of business models and what has to happen and the relatively high cash up front mm-hmm. to make these things, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's almost
a development bank would be silly
to lend that
to give out loans for that.
But here's the thing, right? Is I believe, okay, so I almost got in trouble just now. When the Access Accelerator Small Business Development Center was being conceptualized, one of the things that was built into its foundation was this idea of consumer education for the purpose of creating entrepreneurs. Teaching people how to actually think like business owners in a successful way. Teaching people what entrepreneurship was and what it wasn't. And that was supposed to be a part of the programming for the community outreach and interaction as well, right? But I feel like if someone like the Bahamas Development Bank genuinely wants to make a contribution to boosting success in the orange economy, one of the first things that they would have to do is provide educational opportunities for participants in the orange economy on sustainability practices.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, they would have to say, listen, you can't afford to go to Berklee College of Music. So what I'm going to do is, in this community center, I'm going to offer a 6-week course in Music Business 101. This is how you become a successful participant in the music business. This isn't about songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about performance techniques. This isn't about how to pick a band. This is about what you need to do to make your music a business and to make that business sustainable
mm-hmm.
and successful. What you do after that, that's your business, because it's your business.
Yeah, your business is your business.
Right.
But I'm enough into this cognac now to be down with this.
Yeah, good.
I just wanna call back to
what I don't like, ladies and gentlemen, is when Matthew suggests that the only reason he agrees with me is because he has sipped enough of our tipple. That his dipsomaniacal side is telling him that Quincy is right. This is a problem.
This has nothing to do with right. This has to do with puns.
Okay, fine, whatever.
Well, you knocked that idea out of my head, so I'll let you know if it comes back.
It will. I know that.
Yeah.
It was about your businesses being teaching people? Was it about people?
Oh, no. Yeah. So I go back to talking about capital up front, right? At the very beginning, before we started anything, I was like, you know, some of these take a lot of capital. And then further on in the conversation, I spoke about movies, right? A loan-based movie business makes no sense whatsoever, as I said. But an investment one does, right? And I also spoke about you having to have certain other types of capital, including the human capital. One of the ways, and you know what? I'm going to get some people on here, and we're going to talk about this. Because I know you have a little bit of an interest as well. One of the ways that you could actually make it work, and in fact, probably one of the only ways for traditional style filmmaking, is you have to get a slate together. You have to have a production company that's going to run that slate. And very similar to a venture capital firm, they have little ventures that they're going on called movies. And you better be 10 deep at least, because most of those are not going to give you a return. But one of them hopefully will, right? And that will drive enough capital back in for you to continue down the road. It's going to make you rich? Probably not. Maybe.
I think that's the Lionsgate model, actually.
This is a proven model around the world. Here's the thing. You don't see it being done in the Bahamas. And here's why. Well, I'm going to outline the major reasons. No one wants to work with each other at that level. Now, it's a bunch of reasons. It's not that we don't like each other. Okay? Some people don't like each other. I'll give you that. Thank with you. Your smirks.
Thank you.
Right? I'm not saying that's not. But more than that, they like themselves too much. And they don't want to be not in the driver's seat.
I'm the auteur.
Yes. So there's no this people the willing to just auteur. Be the producers. And directors that would just be directing and put themselves under producers. Producers who wouldn't necessarily be interfering with artistic direction, etc. You know, I mean, it's just difficult to find enough of the right people. And once they're found, to convince them, hey, this is what would have to happen. And once they believe that, get them to commit to giving that a run, which is at least 5 years of their life, to see if it works out. So that's a lot of capital, time, people, trust, money, talent. So opportunity, not being exploited. Opportunity costs. People could be doing other things, like, I don't know, taking care of their families and not gambling on becoming destitute within 5 years.
I'll hurry you, my brother. I'll hurry you.
So they rather struggle along and make one. Ooh, that's a bit like candy now. What is that? Yeah. That extra note of peach is coming out.
An hour later.
Yeah.
Or now and later, as technically today, but we used to call it just an hour later.
Yes. The peachy champagne looking ones.
Yeah. Matthew. Say Matthew. That's funny.
What I murder here,
huh? I like to say
their home's own right. Cognac.
Yes. But the H by Hein, really not very strong. I mean, 40% by volume, so it's only 80 proof. The H by Hein seems to have made a positive impression on you, let's say.
Yeah, I like it. It's nice. I sip it with friends. This is a spring porch beverage.
Spring-like and refreshing. First words on the bottle.
Okay. Which I did not read, dear listener.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So.
Yes, yes. It seems that you agree with Hein on their product.
I'm sure there are worse people in the world to agree with.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, thank you as usual for a great conversation. The orange economy is obviously something we're going to come back to. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, we'll be able to bring some people in here to complicate and make the conversation that much more deep and broad.
We could just straight up row. That's fun too.
Or we could just straight up and knock down, drag out fight is always fun. Hope you feel better soon, my friend.
All right. Thank you very much.
That'll be out.
Ciao.
Yeah.
Check it out.